everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of Mic'd Up, coming to you from the venerable Archbishop Fulton J. Sheen Studio here at headquarters of ChurchMilton.com and our sister organization, St. Michael's Media. It seems there's been a proliferation of Marian apparitions, both real and imagined, this past 100 years or so. Faithful Catholics, of course, are aware that the 100th anniversary of Fatima will be upon us in slightly less than 2 years, but there are a number of other apparitions not so well known that enjoy church approval, and some of them are here in the United States. For example, just before the outbreak of the U.S. Civil War, Our Blessed Mother appeared to 28-year-old Adele Brise in what is now the Diocese of Green Bay, Wisconsin. The site is now a Marian shrine with Our Lady honored there under the title of Our Lady of Good Help. It's a beautiful shrine. I had the opportunity to visit it about 3 years ago. Bishop David Ricken of Green Bay formally approved the apparition on December 8th, Feast of the Immaculate Conception, in 2010. That's it. That's all that it takes for the church to give approval, the approval of the local bishop. Many Catholics think the entire apparition needs some incredible pronouncement from the Vatican itself before it's valid. That's not true. Never has been. The reason the Vatican does, in some cases, a few cases, weigh in is because of the worldwide appeal and attention that a particular apparition may draw. Cases like Fatima, Lourdes, Guadalupe spring to mind, but there are quite a number of other lesser-known apparitions that enjoy exactly the same degree of authenticity, just not the notoriety. They're approved visions, meaning the local bishop has declared them to be authentically supernatural in their origin, in places like Akita, Japan, for example, back in 1973. Apparitions of the Blessed Mother, authentic ones, of course, are near and dear to the hearts of faithful Catholics, as we see them as our loving Lord sending his own sweet mother to us for a special purpose, just as he left her behind for a number of years to console and strengthen the early church in Jerusalem. And that's the word coming from the Church Militant, Mic'd Up. So let's jump right in, should we? In this segment, we're joined by Kevin McCarthy, who's an attorney, a licensed attorney, of course, from Indiana. He also has a licentiate in sacred theology from the Angelicum in Rome and is a spokesman for the devotion to Our Lady of America. Kevin, welcome. How are you?
Good. Good to see you, Michael. It's
good to see you. We're both Notre Dame grads, by the way, but we'll skip over that right now. So, Kevin, let me ask you. There is, this is an apparition I think most Catholics in America, even really good Catholics, really have never even heard of before. First of all, what's sort of just the history of it, Our Lady of America?
Okay. Our Lady of America is a devotion that arose from private revelation to a precious blood sister, starting with an apparition in northern Indiana in a place now known as Rome City. It's also been known geographically as Sylvan Springs. There's a couple of lakes there. And it was also the summer home of the Bishop of Fort Wayne, Indiana, who, of course, today is the Bishop of Fort Wayne, South Bend.
Sure.
The Blessed Virgin appeared there first on September 25th, 1956, which was the eve of the Feast of the North American Martyrs at the time. Mm-hmm. She appeared as Our Lady of Lourdes. And she's promised that she was going to come back in another form, another appearance, and that this could result in miracles greater than all of those that Lourdes and Fatima combined.
Well, that's quite a mouthful.
Yeah, and then she returned the next day on September 26th, 1956, and she appeared in this particular form, displaying her Immaculate Heart and holding the Lily of Purity. The Lily of Purity is more commonly associated with St. Joseph, but in the theological and mystical history of the Church, it's clear that she obtained, or her son obtained, the Lily first for her and then also for St. Joseph, mm-hmm, in connection with the Incarnation and the Immaculate Conception.
Sure.
The key message she gave is that she wanted her children to have purity in their lives. And, of course, the virtue of purity is, many would consider, desperately needed at this time.
Yeah. Understatement.
And it's a gateway to a more fervent or more devout religious life.
Well, give us the history. Who did she appear to?
She appeared to Sister Mary Ephraim, mm-hmm, known in before religion as Mildred Neutzel, mm-hmm, who came from a large family, immigrated from Vienna, Austria, originally to the New York metropolitan area and then to Cleveland. This religious sister had some other experiences. In fact, our Lord Jesus Christ appeared to her, and in the message books, those messages from Jesus appear even before the ones from Mary. The apparition was basically this message of this call to purity. And eventually, she appeared to her a number of times after that, eventually appearing to her in Ohio, in a particular place in Ohio. Precious Blood Sisters are from Ohio, from the Dayton, Ohio area, and they staffed this place in northern Indiana, this convent and sanatorium or spa facility that was used for summertime for water treatment. It was at this location near Rome City where she first appeared in this appearance. But then she continued to grant messages, including on November 15th, 1956, when she said that she wanted an image made of Our Lady of America, as is here, and that she wanted that made into a statue and to have the bishops of the United States process that statue into the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception at Washington, D.C., and basically place it there permanently to be the center of devotion for the entire structure. And that procession has never occurred, but we're hoping it could soon occur.
And so folks know, first of all, this has the support, obviously, of Cardinal Burke.
Yeah, well, it started, the local church in Cincinnati, Ohio, was involved because the Precious Blood Sisters were based in Dayton, Ohio, in the Archdiocese of Cincinnati. So she had actually had a spiritual director who became eventually the Vicar General and Auxiliary Bishop of the Archdiocese of Cincinnati. Later, the Bishop of Evansville, Indiana, and then returned and became the Archbishop of Cincinnati.
While she was still there.
Yeah.
Okay.
His name was Paul Francis Leibold. Really holy, extraordinary guy. And he had given the choice to Sister of three different canonical paths for the approval of her experience in accordance with canon law. He said, you can go to the Bishop of Fort Wayne, where this first started, or you can go to the Bishop where you're currently living in Toledo, Ohio, or you can go through your Mother Superior in obedience, and she can bring it to me as an official of the Archdiocese of Cincinnati. So that's what she chose to do.
Okay.
So he actually granted three different approvals at different stages in the process, including when he returned as Archbishop. When I became involved in this in 2005, a year later in 2006, we took this image we had made to the annual meeting of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. And it was all arranged by my friend Cardinal Burke, who was then Archbishop Burke in St. Louis, to bring it. When we did, I asked him, would he do a complete review of what Archbishop Leibold had done and what had occurred in the history of this, and kind of bring it forward and make sure that we had a kind of an independent, more modern review of what occurred.
Right.
And he issued a letter on July 31st, 2007. So it took him from November 2006 to May 31st, 2007 to issue the letter. He studied more than 400 pages of papers and documents that we had, correspondence. He said, well...
And that's not just any mind going over.
No,
it's
said,
a very smart mind.
And very thorough. He was very thorough about it. He
absolutely
went through a number of iterations and so forth, and he did all the writing. And he said that... He said, well, Kevin, just tell them that I said you could tell them that it, whatever Archbishop Leibold did was canonically complete and canonically perfect. I said, well, that's good enough for me.
Well, there you go.
So... Some people raised the issue that the kind of approval that was given by Bishop Ricken to Our Lady of Good Help was not given this devotion. And the reason is that that kind of approval was not established until more than 5 years after Archbishop Leibold was for nearly 5 years after he was functioning.
Now, there's some controversy around the some people saying, isn't there another lady involved? Is there another nun involved?
There's a woman 25 years younger than the visionary nun who, after she died, claimed that she inherited the devotion. And there's actually been litigation over it, and the litigation defeated that contention by the woman in a jury trial in Indianapolis. It's currently been submitted for appeal to the United States Court of Appeals at Chicago, and we're hopeful that'll soon be resolved, and perhaps resolved in time for Pope Francis to join in this sought procession on September 23rd when he's at the National Shrine.
Is it have events moved in such a way that it could actually be a possibility?
Well, we fostered a letter-writing campaign, and now thousands of letters have gone to the Holy Father requesting that he do that. And he's not really the most predictable pope we've ever had. So, he could certainly at any time say, well, that's fine. Your man won the trial court, and we're not going to worry about the appeal, and let's have the right. Let's just have this procession.
Sure. What's the reception among the American bishops? And you can't see this is not a collective.
The reception thing, was always good once we reintroduced the devotion in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
I would say because of events over the last 6 months to a year, most of the bishops are in a reasoned and careful way, frantic to get the procession done.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Because the promised grace of a nearly universal infusion of the virtue of purity in the American populace is something that the church desperately needs.
Mm-hmm.
And as you, because of all these issues we're all aware of, about
sure.
marriage and collateral issues about human sexuality and so forth.
Sure.
You can imagine if there's a some way to get some massive additional grace on the problem, I'd say definitely a majority of the U.S. bishops are for that.
I was going to say, is there any opposition among the hierarchy?
There seems to be a kind of a coolness on the part of a small number of them.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them in important positions.
But
the shrine's technically the property of the conference.
Okay.
It's administered by a committee, but by tradition, the committee's always been mostly cardinals.
Sure.
And then they let it default to the Cardinal Archbishop of Washington, D.C.
Right.
on a workaday basis. And then there's a rector there.
And that's Monsignor Rossi.
Rossi, yeah.
Right, right.
But I'm really satisfied that once this litigation's cleared up, that it won't be an issue. And
okay.
as we discussed in 2006, this committee, although made up of distinguished cardinals, is secondary to the conference. The conference has the power. So if the conference takes a vote when it meets and says, we're going to do this, under parliamentary law, the committee of cardinals is discharged.
Right.
You don't...
Their job is done.
You don't need to worry about it. It's already been taken care of by the big guys.
Exactly. The people who appointed you.
Yeah.
So do you think then, Kevin, that there is a... I mean, what are we talking about, a month or a month and a couple of weeks right now at this point?
It's in the clinches right now.
Okay.
But it really seems to me that this could happen for this reason. All the bishops are going to be present with the Pope for the canonization of Blessed Junipero Serra.
Right.
The big problem with having all the United States bishops participate in a procession is getting them there.
Right.
Okay. So they'll be there. And honoring the Virgin Mary in the course of canonizing a Franciscan is perfectly natural. Honoring the Virgin Mary is an act, as you know, of hyperdulia. Mm-hmm. So you can always have an act of hyperdulia accompany an act of dulia, the honoring of the saint.
Mm-hmm.
And because there's an outcry for this, even though Junipero Serra was associated with, early in his time in Mexico, with a visit to Tepeyac, where the Empress of the Americas, Our Lady of Guadalupe, appeared.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that nonetheless this could be done. And the statue's within 10 miles currently of the National Shrine. It can be there within 4 hours by me picking up the telephone and making a call. So, yeah, it could be a last-minute deal. Some people say we have a last-minute God.
Well, I don't think you'd have any argument with that around here. Do you? How big is the actual statue?
The statue's about life size.
Okay.
And
so roughly 6 feet.
Yeah, okay. five and a half feet to 6 feet with the crown.
Sure. Do you know, has, so to speak, a hole in the schedule for the Holy Father and the bishops that is just sort of being left
Well,
open?
Actually, they're supposed to meet at 11:30 in the morning in the Cathedral of St. Matthew downtown.
Right.
And they don't have the canonization until later in the afternoon. I'm sure they have a lunch. It seems from the word I've gotten back from intermediaries talking even to people like Cardinal Burke,
mm-hmm.
that if it's decided they want to do it, it's basically going to be overwhelmingly decided.
Does the conference have a meeting between now and when the Holy Father arrives where they could actually do this, or is this
nope,
just
they're
a
all
bunch
gonna
of
be,
phone
they're,
calls?
They're all going to be gathered, and if okay. the Holy Father suggests it...
Well, they're not going to say no.
No.
Is there so the play, to use Notre Dame football, the play here is for the Holy Father to say, hey, let's do this.
Yeah, the appeal that we've made in the letters that have been written is to the function of the Holy Father under Luke 22:32,
mm-hmm.
which is the power to confirm his brothers in the faith,
mm-hmm.
his power to confirm the rest of the bishops of the world in doing an act of faith. So we've said, and also in the canon law, that you have a certain universal power. And so we're actually asking that you exercise this universal power in the form of a suggestion. And we've also communicated, actually, informally with the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, even before these letter-writing campaigns started with the Pope, saying, look, it is possible that this could suddenly come up at the last minute. You need to be aware of this devotion. You need to be aware because the Holy Father may well turn to you and ask you, is this a prudent thing to do? Mm-hmm. So we've given them a lot of information and communicated to the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. So we've done the best we can to put it in a position where it can work out. And I've had a lot of contacts and done work with the Vatican over 20 years, and I'm satisfied that it's a real possibility. Whether it happens or not, we don't know, but it's a real possibility. It's certainly doable.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it. All the path has been cleared that if it can happen, it'll happen.
Yeah.
So, last question then. Betting man, yes or no? Odds?
I'd say 68-70% probability.
Very good. That's pretty darn good. Very good. All right, Kevin.